ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Continuing discussion of the history of ISKCON, and particularly how the movement has changed. As I've said, it's not just the opinion of some disgruntled person, as I may be seen as, but there's actually a book called Hare Krishna Transformed by a scholar, E. Burke Rochford, who's throughout his academic career, ISKCON has been a major focus of his studies. He's I guess you could classify him as a sociologist of religion. So one book he wrote, Hare Krishna Transformed, he, in various chapters, describes aspects of how the movement that Srila Prabhupada started has transformed in various significant ways. The word transformed means a significant change. It indicates significant change, not some minor change. One of the what I see as one of the crucial paragraphs in that book, which I'm going to paraphrase because I didn't make a note of it here, is in a chapter in which yours truly, myself, is featured as being one of the opponents of feminism within ISKCON. If you didn't happen to know that I'm an opponent of feminism within ISKCON, it's attested by E. Burke Rochford, if you take his opinion seriously. It seems that GBC does, because during the 1996 centennial year of Srila Prabhupada, they commissioned him to make a survey of ISKCON members' opinions, which he, the results were not given much publicity by the GBC, because the results were not very flattering overall to the GBC. Anyway, there's a paragraph in which he says that protests by myself and others to the GBC members about blasphemy of Srila Prabhupada from within his movement was ignored by GBC members because they found it expedient to do so. And this episode, he stated, E. Burke Rochford stated, it marked the original aim of Srila Prabhupada to establish traditional gender roles within ISKCON. It marked that as that had gone to the edge of ISKCON, and the center of ISKCON was now something closer to the Western liberal model, which he himself was quite comfortable with. He wasn't against that, because he's a member of the academia, which, if you're going to remain in academia, especially in the social sciences, if you're going to keep a tenured position, you have to be what the great the great beef-eater Jordan Peterson says is a neo-Marxist, cultural Marxism. Anyway, these are all big topics which I won't get into explaining in my amateurish way what a neo-Marxist is, but I hope you get the idea. So anyway, I was talking about the difficulties the devotees were going through, the leaders of the movement in America, especially beginning in the 1980s, the leaders and all the members, those who remained within ISKCON, especially within America, because the impact of the anti-cult movement was felt most strongly in America. The impact of the guru fall downs was very strong in the Western world, throughout the Western world. In North America, South America wasn't much affected because the gurus there didn't have any gross documented fall downs. South and Central America wasn't affected in that sense. Europe affected. Croatia is a case in point. Although Harikesh's fall down came actually quite a long time after the mass fall downs, which started around the mid-1980s. In 1986, three of the biggest, Bhagavan, he was really huge. Rameshwar was huge. And Bhavananda, they're all huge, but they all fell away. So Australia and New Zealand was affected, particularly by Bhavananda. India wasn't so much affected, although Bhavananda had a good following. But well, in another sense, it was with the, but it's a long history. The Ritvik movement came up. The Ritvik idea was first floated quite a few years after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance from our mortal vision. The Ritvik idea, no one had any idea of Ritvikism until Rupa Vilas Prabhu, who was in the meantime, rejected it. He floated this idea, then it was developed, but it actually materialized, reified, to use a fancy word, in given concrete shape in India. So anyway, this was going on. But one point I was making, for various reasons, devotees, especially because of the anti-cult movement, the devotees in America, I was saying in America especially, because actually America is very influential. Srila Prabhupada was very much aware of that. He said several times that if America takes up Krishna consciousness, the whole world will follow. And his strategy in India was to bring Western devotees, who are principally Americans, because he saw that India is following the West. India is enamored by the West. So his idea was if they see Americans taking up Krishna consciousness, then the Indians themselves will want to follow. And it actually worked. Srila Prabhupada was preaching in India before he went to the West, but he wasn't taken seriously until he came back with a team of American devotees. And actually, even not only for India, but for preaching all over the world, it was mostly pioneered by American devotees. And that includes Europe, Australia, Japan, China eventually, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And mostly pioneering work was done by American devotees. South America. So the influence of Americans were often in the leadership positions in various parts of the world, and the influences that came from America tended to spread throughout the world. And again, I'm speaking in a very general way, generalized way. Now, during the 1980s, especially, the devotees, they became increasingly concerned to present themselves as a non-threat. I'd stated that or described a bit how the cults in America were seen as a threat. I didn't mention the Rajneesh cult. I'll talk a little bit about that. That was a huge, just like Jonestown, I mentioned that. There was a huge issue in American life, and the American psyche was much influenced by the Jonestown massacre. That was 1979. And in 1981, Rajneesh, Bhagawan Rajneesh, as he called himself, who was actually not even a Hindu by background, he was a Jain. And he had set himself up as a guru, a very unorthodox guru, and he prided himself on being unorthodox. In Pune, in India, known as Pune at the time. And practically he got chased out of the country for his various what were perceived as illegal and antisocial activities. So he set up shop in America in 1981. Set up shop means his followers founded a community in Oregon, Northwest United States, and he had a huge amounts of money. Seemingly, no money was not only not a problem, but he was vastly wealthy. So, without consulting with the local people, he moved into a village or a remote area in Oregon, bought up a several thousand acre ranch, an abandoned ranch, and started developing that. There were similar problems in England. Not that there was an anti-cult movement per se, nothing like that in America, but the Bhaktivedanta Manor, formerly Pigott's Manor, in the village of Lechmore Heath, that caused a big stir because the local people became increasingly disturbed by the continual influx and reflux, I guess, coming and going of Indians. It wasn't so much that they were Indians as the traffic was disturbing them. They'd bought their properties in a village just outside London. It must be for among the most expensive areas in the whole of the country to live, because it's just outside London, so you can commute into London very easily. But at the same time, it's absolutely rustic. So peaceful. So the people can work in London and come back to a very peaceful, quaint English village. But that was being spoiled by the festivals. Especially on festival days, there'd be traffic jams which were just unimaginable previously. And on Sundays, there'd be a constant flow of traffic. And even though it mostly didn't stop in the village, the traffic didn't stop. It went inside the grounds of the manor, but it was disturbing. And in retrospect, it could be said that the devotees, they could have considered the local people's feelings more. Although the local people did take a very hard-line stance, and they the Bhaktivedanta Manor was almost closed down, and eventually a solution was reached in which they closed the front gate, or the only gate, bought land so that the traffic didn't come through the village. They bought land and built a road going out in the opposite direction, so the traffic no longer comes into Lechmore Heath, and the manor is in Lechmore Heath, but it's to a large extent cut off from the village. So a solution was reached, but that's another whole story. But I'm just making the point that these Rajneeshis, as they call themselves, they didn't care about the local people's feelings. The local village was a population of less than 100, and they felt that, well, it's America, and there's freedom of religion, freedom of assembly. We don't need to take permission from anyone. We can legally, we're not doing anything wrong. But they did infuriate the local people. First of all, the main thing was that their cult was a sex cult, and then it was said to be religion, but they openly promoted sex and orgies. So that this is, you have to understand, if it had been in New York City, they might have got away with it, but it was in a very conservative part of the United States. America, it's not one homogeneous mass. There are definite cultural areas and different cultural differences. And that was a very conservative area. wealth, there's so much money, it was not appreciated. They flaunted all their Rolls Royces. The Rajneeshis acted quite arrogantly. They tried to take over they took over because their numbers, they outnumbered the local people of the local village, and therefore they took over the local administration. One of their own people became the mayor of a tiny little place, and they appointed their own local police. And they didn't care. They were very arrogant in dealing with the local people. And the police in America are allowed to be armed, so they brought in a huge amount of arms, guns. It was all legal, but it didn't go down at all well with the local people and with the state administration of Oregon. So their guns, their arrogance, and their sex, their money, and overall they're just so very different, something very different. Just Lechmore Heath, that was another factor. Just something very different, ending up in a very conservative part of the country and not caring what the local people thought. And they really, really made bad relationships with the local people. That may happen when you have money. You have a lot of money, you can become very arrogant. And that was seen in ISKCON. When I was talking about the easy money that came by these scams, selling Hong Kong paintings, etc. And the leaders became flush with wealth. They had practically absolute power over their followers and lots of money and followers. And some of them became very arrogant. Pride leads to a fall. So anyway, to make a long story short, and anyway, why do we want to talk so much about Rajneesh? But he became very famous, which can be good for preaching also, because more and more people joined him. But it's more like infamy among the general populace. And on the surface, he wasn't doing anything wrong, although it was discovered later that some of his followers had deliberately poisoned people in the nearby town because they didn't want them to vote. So because they wanted their own people to capture the administrative position, so they made these people very sick by poisoning them. That wasn't discovered till later, and there was some attempted murder within their own community, and who knows what else went on. So I'm just stating all this because it made a very, very bad impression in the impressionable minds of the American populace. It didn't, especially the press overall was not in favor of Rajneesh. It was in favor of the Rajneesh and his followers. It was in favor of the all-American orthodoxy that was opposed to him. And eventually, Rajneesh was arrested, and there was a plea bargain, and he agreed to leave. He pleaded guilty to some, not actually very, they didn't really have anything very major on him, but he pleaded guilty to some technical misdemeanors. I don't know if they would count as felonies. And anyway, he agreed to leave America. And then after being in America from 1981 to 1985, he left, vowing never to come back. And overall, the American people were happy with that. So I'm just saying this was from maybe about 3 years, from about 1982 to 1985, Rajneesh was in the news regularly. And it didn't look good, and it wasn't good. So devotees, our own ISKCON devotees, were trying to portray themselves because we got lumped in. It's another cult. Hare Krishna is another cult. It's the same kind of thing. So the devotees were trying very hard to portray themselves as being not antisocial, not anti-American, we're pro-American, we believe in your values, which actually isn't a fact. If you see Prabhupada's teachings, he was very much against many of the value of the whole course of the Western civilization in as much as it's highly materialistic, it's not based on pursuing the real goal of life. It's a misled civilization. In the book that I'm compiling called The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada, I've made a whole list of the different things that Srila Prabhupada referred to modern civilization as. Many, many things. Nonsense civilization, foolish civilization, childish civilization, Asuric civilization, cat and dog civilization, Hiranyakashipu civilization, on and on and on. Prabhupada had so many adjectives. He wasn't enamored by it at all, to say the least. So actually, Srila Prabhupada didn't want to make a major revolution in the American way of life, as all the cults were talking of doing, with the exception of this transcendental meditation, which was presented itself as just a technique which anyone can use. So they did want to change the world, but it was not that they wanted to change the whole structure or direction of the way of life in general, but they wanted to add the transcendental, everyone should do transcendental meditation, then we'd all be nicer people. So it didn't go down so badly, although hardcore Christians didn't like it so much. But that wasn't, they weren't taking people out of their families and making communes, which were very different to, with a completely different lifestyle, and they didn't proclaim any idea to make any kind of social, massive social change, which actually Srila Prabhupada wanted to do. in establishing Varnashram society, back to the land, simple living and high thinking. So our devotees increasingly, they wanted to portray themselves as being quite compatible with mainstream American life. And actually they were in many ways, because as I'd said, many of the devotees, they went from temple life, ashram life, to mainstream American life. And although many of them remained devotees at some level, in many ways they compromised with the by the force of association and maybe the force of necessity, having to do a job like everyone else. They imbibed some of those values also. So like I say, it's a complex tapestry. Now, regarding the anti-cult situation, there was, in the early 1980s, Hans Aduta was he was one of the Zonal Acharyas, and he was busted by the cops in, where else, California. He had a farm community, and it was found to be full of guns. Not only that, but he himself on at least one occasion, he had gone out driving drunk and shooting. Yeah. So when this all came out in the news, it didn't come out very well at all. You can imagine. Is it Hare Krishna with guns? And it came in the news that, what did the devotees do? It was terrible publicity. And they're thinking, well, if he has it, they all have it. Just like if some guns are found in a mosque, then people start to think, well, they probably all have guns. If you find guns stashed in a mosque, that fear will be there. I'm talking about a mosque, especially in the Western world or in India, where Islam is seen as a threat by many people. Then it came out in the newspapers that he was excommunicated from ISKCON, although apparently there's no official record of that being so, but for all intents and purposes, he was excommunicated. So devotees felt they had to make such a radical step to preserve their own attempts to maintain a good image in the eyes of the public. And of course, I'm speaking in general and a simplified way, because there were many other issues also, because Hans Aduta, also known as Gunza Shooter, he always lived on the brink, Prabhupada liked. And he cultivated notoriety, so I guess he got it. He was a... Nietzsche might have liked him. So that was... there were other factors also. Within ISKCON, he was the black sheep. He even wrote a book called The Black Sheep Speaks Out. He liked that moniker, black sheep. But I don't know if black sheep, that will translate into Croatian. It does? It does also. All right. Poor black sheep. They got a bad reputation. Black cats have a bad reputation also, right? They're considered unlucky. What did they do? Yeah, the cat, black cat especially, is very unlucky, right? Why? What did they do? But anyway. And then also then there was the whole phenomenon of New Vrindavan and Kirtanananda. While our devotees, on one hand, they were attending meetings of the concerned families association and trying to instill family values within ISKCON and be like good normal citizens in the eyes of the American public, and very wisely stopped the change-up. I'd mention about that, the change-up method of distributing or fleecing people's money while they were distributing books. While certain leaders in our movement were really making a very good effort, very sustained effort to give ISKCON a good image, but not just in a cosmetic manner, but to actually see what was going on. They're changing the attitudes of the devotees also. Now, in some ways, it may not be such a bad policy. If you consider the situation, which was very strongly anti-cult, and it's very difficult to speak to anyone. You may have this experience when you're out distributing books, if you meet a hardcore Christian, that you can't talk with them or reason with them. In their eyes, you are wrong. You are wrong, 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 wrong. And if there's any other word to describe you, it is wrong. There's nothing good about you. You're not a Christian. You're a cult member. You're a representative of Satan. You are wrong, bad. Not just bad, evil. So that's the way that certain hardcore Christians, up to the present day, still not even a few, because even without knowing the situation, I could just guess, here in Croatia, which is a relatively mild and liberal country overall, I would say. But pretty much everywhere in the Western world especially, and in other parts, actually throughout the world, you get these hardcore Christians who are totally unreasonable and close-minded, and there's no way to speak with them. Well, can you imagine if a large part of the populace is like that, and they have the power to, or they're trying to close you down, as in the Robin George case. Of course, it wasn't that the whole populace was doing that, but much of the populace supported moves to, they would be happy to see Hare Krishna closed down, by hook or by crook. In the Rajneesh case, although we don't at all support his teachings, it was, if you take it from the objective point of view, the state authorities in the state of Oregon, they wanted to close him down. And it wasn't even so much on legal grounds, that they just didn't like it at all. They could have tolerated, but they were intolerant. So an atmosphere of severe intolerance was there. And there were also, just like I say, the American Civil Liberties Union, there were certain scholars who stood behind ISKCON, Thomas Hopkins, Joseph O'Connell, Larry Shin, Harvey Cox, who died earlier. He was a big man, Harvey Cox, big theologian in American life. He died fairly earlier, but they stood behind us. But the massive thrust was against us. So devotees were trying to survive in that atmosphere and trying to present themselves as harmless, law-abiding citizens. But it did make it very difficult when you had things like guns a shooter, hands a duta. And then with Kirtanananda, even though the devotees had outlawed within ISKCON law, techniques of fundraising that were, well, it specifically said, don't do anything illegal and don't do anything which is going to turn the public off, like this change up. But Kirtananda knew Vrindavan. He had his own brand of trying to connect with the American people. He made some kind of compromise between Christianity and Krishna consciousness. He dressed his followers in orange robes, but they were like, they looked more like Christian monks' robes. He changed the liturgy from Sanskrit to English, so the prayers would be sung in English. He brought in a church organ. He wanted to do that, and they tried to make it westernized and Christianized. But the result was not so much that Christians liked it, but he just made something different. That's all. It didn't go down well with most of the devotees. Jesus was on Vyasa's son. Another thing, they dressed Prabhupada with a crown. A crown like the kings of England used to wear. And still the Queen of England will wear maybe just at coronation. Yeah, there were so many things. They had Jesus on the altar and then the Buddha. They were trying to do a mishmash of all different religions. And so he had some success. The palace of gold was built, Prabhupada's palace, which was becoming a major tourist attraction in the state of West Virginia. So that was something that was successful, that was going on in ISKCON. New Vrindavan was successful. People were joining. They got good publicity from the Prabhupada's palace. Mainstream Americans came to visit. The state government of West Virginia appreciated because it became one of the major tourist attractions in West Virginia, which means it brought income to that relatively economically backward state. So they were doing great, and he knew it. And he was pretty arrogant about it too. And there was the idea that, well, he's the real pure devotee, and all the others are falling down. And he himself used to sing a song, there were 10 little Indians, and then there were 9 little Indians, and then there were 8 little, some song about, based on some story, I believe it's an Agatha Christie story of 10 little niggers, and there were 10 people on an island, and then one died, and someone must have killed them, one was murdered, and then another was murdered, and they couldn't work it out. So anyway, they were dying one by one. So he was saying, he sung this song with the idea that all the other gurus are going to fall down, only I am pure, and purity is the force, and I will be the king of the whole world. And then he'll have a crown also, like Prabhupada. He represented himself as the founder acharya of the new Vrindavan community, using that founder acharya title, which was only for Prabhupada. And in this way, he wanted to show that our center is much better, our guru is much better. He had an ambition, as Srila Prabhupada said, to build 7 temples on 7 hills. That required a lot of money. For getting the money, he sent his followers out to sell things like baseball caps at baseball games. With the logo of the team, so people would like to buy it. It's an easy sell. If you go to a baseball game with tens of thousands of people attending, and you're selling a cap with the logo of your of the team, people like to, it's an easy sell, easy money. But it was illegal because the logo is copyrighted by the company that owns the team. But they were getting away with it. And they were doing all kinds of scams, illegal things. Also, oh, there was also, there's so many things. Jiva, what was his name? Head of the Sankirtan party. Women were the biggest pickers. They were called pickers. Those who went out in the public to raise money. Picking the money, just like picking money from, picking fruits from trees. So the women were the, because who will say no to a pretty woman who's smiling at you saying, just give a little donation. Who's going to say no? I mean, at baseball games, who goes? It's mostly men, right? It's a, so who can manage the women's Sankirtan party? Well, there are a few devotees who could do that, and there's one devotee, Jiva, or something, I can't remember his name exactly. He was put in charge, and he found, he discovered a great technique for getting all the women to cooperate and be in charge of them. He'd have sex with a different one every night. Hare Krishna. Not exactly following the four regulated principles, but it seemed to work. And the money was coming in. He was connected with New Vrindavan also. So they're all kind, oh no, was that Jiva? No, it was Dharma something. I know the devotee actually. He's actually a very good devotee in many ways. Despite that bad past. Dharma, I can't remember his name, it doesn't matter. Oh, Jiva was another one doing a similar thing. Jiva something, Jivanatha. Anyway, there were so many things going on. There was also opposition to Kirtananda within the community. If anyone opposed him, then they'd be thrown out of New Vrindavan. There was a case in which a devotee who was actually a godbrother of Kirtananda's, but he tended to teach, treat his godbrothers as disciples also, had married a young woman who was a disciple of Kirtananda, but he was very critical of Kirtananda. So Kirtananda wanted to throw him out, but he wanted to keep the disciple. So she stayed with him, with their son. And he went out of New Vrindavan and the wife stayed, and that he was upset to no end, and he was writing, he wrote some book about Kirtananda and all the gurus and how bad they are. And there was some, the way he was talking, he was also taking LSD and other intoxicants. So, but the way he was talking, that from his language it seemed that he might want to kill Kirtananda, but what happened is one of Kirtananda's followers killed him instead. And he wasn't the first one that was killed. There were two disciples of Srila Prabhupada who were killed under Kirtananda's watch. So it was bad. So anyway, eventually the whole thing came to court. The killings, as far as I know, that wasn't the but racketeering, that Kirtananda was brought to court on charges of, well, it often happens that the police want to get someone, but the criminals are so clever that they cover their tracks. Al Capone, you all know the name of Al Capone, the great mobster of Chicago, in Chicago during the Prohibition days. He was eventually indicted on a tax evasion, on a tax evasion case, although he had orchestrated dozens, if not hundreds, of killings, and he was running the whole mafia selling bootlegged alcohol, but he was he was eventually done in on some minor thing, tax evasion, and they got him on that. So Kirananda was done on some, he was sent to prison, and the devotees cooperated, the regular ISKCON devotees who had thrown him, and by association knew Vrindavan, he was thrown out of ISKCON because of all the, and you can imagine when a Hare Krishna guru gets indicted on charge or charges like this, what kind of press there's going to be, and the effort of the devotees to present themselves, we're not a cult. And here you have the same thing, cult people going out following their leader, not listening to anyone else, breaking the law, doing all kinds of antisocial things, and murder. That was really a low spot. So our devotees were testifying against him. And to try to say, well, one major reason for that is to try to show, hey, we're not with him either. You're against him, we're against him too. We don't believe in such things. We're not a cult. That was the message that was they were trying to put out. So as you can see, it was a very complex scene, and our movement went through many difficulties during the 1980s through to the 1990s. The Gurukuls, we had so many problems in the Gurukuls, which you're probably aware of, the child abuse that didn't come out till later. Many of the parents, understanding the situation with their children and the situation with ISKCON as a whole, didn't want to send their children to Gurukuls. No way. They wanted to send them to normal schools. And then their children became normal citizens of America. They might be vegetarian. Or somewhat devotees, but not really or fully or committedly. And most of the children of devotees from that era, in their lives, they definitely resemble more like average Americans than average Hare Krishnas, whatever an average American is and whatever an average Hare Krishna is. But you get the idea. One thing that should be said, at the same time our temples was going on, our movement was going on, book distribution went down a lot in America, but it was going on. Harinam almost stopped. Harinam Sankirtan to a large extent stopped. People, even today in many parts of America, if you meet them, you go around dressed like this, which devotees, they largely stopped doing. They wouldn't want to go outside the temples or even inside the temples in devotee clothes because they felt ashamed or whatever. So Hare Krishna became forgotten. It was well known due to the Harinam Sankirtan largely. And then it became known in a bad way for the book distribution techniques. But to a large extent, people forgot it. I related, I was transiting in some airport in America a few years ago, and one elderly couple, as people often do, if you go around dressed in what we call devotee clothes, many people say, well, what's this? So they know it's something religious. What is it? Is it Buddhist? Often they think it's Buddhist because actually in the meantime, Dalai Lama became very prominent in America and in the Western world especially, and prominent and respected, and respected to the extent that that the American government arranges security guards for him, which is that's only something for very big people. I may be wrong, but it seems to me that his word in moral and social issues is taken more seriously, and he's more prominent in the mass media than the Pope. What do you think? It's touch and go. Maybe in a Catholic country, the Pope is more prominent. But the fact that it's, you even have to think about it, well, that makes, that shows how prominent he's become. That a non-Christian religious leader has become widely respected, widely known, not only non-Christian, but teaching something which is absolutely foreign, just about the opposite of Christianity. It's about as opposite as a religion could get to Christianity, as Buddhism, but highly respected. And he goes everywhere in his monk's dress. I don't think he has in his suitcase any kami clothes. I doubt it very much. It would be very surprising if he even had such things. And his followers, the monks, they also, they don't dress in, they don't have any secular dress. But devotees stopped wearing that, and they largely became, they stopped doing Harinam Sankirtan in America, practically stopped. Maybe, in, I mean, it didn't completely stop, but in many places it did so. The devotees, they people didn't know them. And if they did know, it was mostly due to bad publicity. So, it was a very difficult time. Preaching was going on to some extent, not much. You can imagine it's very difficult to preach in such an atmosphere. If you're almost, devotees were almost expecting that people would be inimical to them. My own experience was different. I first went to the United States in 1986. And as usual, when I travel in the Western world, or anywhere in the world, well, I don't even bring with me any kami clothes. There are some countries which I need to enter in. I have to go through immigration in kami clothes. I do have some kami clothes. But just like on this trip to the West, I came from India to Germany, then to Slovenia and here, then I'm going to Russia, then back to India. I didn't bring kami clothes with me. Not needed. So, what was the point I was going to make? I forgot. So, there was some point I was going to make, which I forgot, because I'm talking about myself as usual. So, yeah, the devotees largely became forgotten except for the bad publicity. I was making the point that in New York, devotees, or my experience generally in America, the first time when I went in 1986 and again in 1987, and I go irregularly. But I found the devotees, they seemed to think, many devotees thought, well, we can't go outside in kami clothes because everyone will hate us. But I didn't find that. It wasn't that everyone hates us. What I found was that people mostly didn't know us. In New York especially, I found that people like us because they identify, the New Yorkers, if at all they know us, they know that Hare Krishna comes from New York. So they like that. And they like zany things. It's part of New York's identity that all kinds of zany, unorthodox things. But I did have an experience, this must have been in the 2000s, in Dublin, in Ireland. I was in one of the main streets there, passing out leaflets for a program that we were doing. And we were doing Harinam, and some young woman with an American accent asked me, well, what's all this about? I said, it's Hare Krishna. She said, what's that? And I explained a little bit. And I asked her, where are you from? She's probably from America. She said, from New York. Never heard of Hare Krishna. So that's a sad situation. Sad situation in which the devotees became almost paranoid. And again, I'm speaking subjectively, but subjectively and maybe simplistically, but for one reason or another, the Hare Krishna movement went, it almost seemed to go undercover. Like in the Soviet Union at the same time, the Hare Krishna movement was booming undercover. And that was actually a boost for the devotees worldwide when a worldwide campaign was made to free the Soviet devotees who were in prison. So that's something that the Western people liked, that the Hare Krishnas are standing up for the rights of freedom in the Soviet Union. So that became a very big thing internationally also. So that looked good for the devotees. So all kinds of things going on. I won't continue now. It'll take probably at least half an hour more to finish, and why go very late? We can take rest on time and get up for Mangal Aarti, and we can continue the topic tomorrow, Krishna willing. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. All glories to the devotees who stuck through it all and came out the other end. And all glories to all the devotees, even those who didn't stick it out. Anyone who takes to Krishna consciousness in any way at any time is glorious. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyavacha patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.